This is Autoline After Hours with John McElroy and Gary Vasilash, episode 448 for January 18th, 2019. Inside the Detroit Auto Show. Watch Autoline After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific Time. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline in iTunes, Stitcher, or on YouTube.
Autoline After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion. Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems. And by BorgWarner, propulsion solutions that support a clean, energy-efficient world.
Now, good afternoon, and thanks for watching. And for those of you who are watching, you can see that John is not here. He's on assignment today. So I am joined by a panel of my august colleagues.
More December, I think.
That's true.
My birthday's in September. So.
I'm in June.
Close. Yeah, and as you can tell, this is going to be a great show.
Yeah, we're not.
So,
yes.
Yeah, so, so first of all, you recognize her. You remember her from being at Forbes, but now Joanne Mueller, who is at Axios. And tell us what Axios is.
All right. Well, great. Thanks for having me. So Axios is a two-year-old media site. We are specializing in smart brevity, which means we give you news in small nuggets that you can digest quickly, make you smarter faster. In September, I launched a newsletter on autonomous vehicles. So we're diving deep into that topic, and it comes out twice a week, Wednesdays and Fridays, and it's free, so you can subscribe online at axios.com.
And thanks. Do they do like slash autonomous, or how does that work?
On the website,
to get to you.
If you go to axios.com, there's a button right at the top that says newsletters. And you drop down, I think I'm the third one. It says clearly, Axios Autonomous Vehicles. You hit subscribe and you're done.
Okay. Frank Marcus, Motor Trend, and I'm sure that we don't need to tell people what Motor Trend is, but
still delivering news in full heartburn-inducing size and scope.
And last but not least, Todd Lassa from Automobile Magazine.
Automobile Magazine, the Automobile Magazine, not an Automobile Magazine, which is what a lot of people ask me when I tell them I work for the Automobile Magazine. They say, which one?
Yeah.
So that's what you get for having an eponymous named magazine, I guess.
And you have a very
eponymous name being redundant, but you get.
And you have a very clever URL for your website.
It's automobilemag.com.
That's right. So just don't put in automobile because
right.
You will not get there.
You might, who knows what you'll get.
Yeah, you don't even want to know what you'll get in your
Russian
IT.
Russian box.
Sure.
Yeah, or your IT department will come down on your head. And so it's automobilemag.com.
Right.
So, okay, last week we didn't have a show and you guys weren't here. But it was CES.
It would have been funnier if we'd been here and there wasn't a show.
That's
still
true.
Still wasn't a show, you know.
So, Frank, I know that you were out at CES, the show that is becoming a automotive show in its own right.
Yeah, I mean, people always say that, and I'm quick to point out that still, how many cars have made their debut there? Like three or four in the history of the show? So, no, it's not a car show. Automotive, you know, engineering is so much more electronic focused nowadays that the formerly consumer electronics show, please just call us CES now, is a great place to talk about all the technology that's going into the future of cars and everything else. And there are now, you know, several halls of largely automotive stuff. But yeah, I mean, there's always a lot going on out there, a lot of trends, you know, connectivity, autonomy being the chief among them. A lot of talk about 5G. This year, so.
But cars get lost. I mean, if you listen to or read or watch mainstream press, you might hear a little bit of a something about cars. But, for example, Frank mentioned that three or four cars have made their premieres at that show, including the Chevy Bolt, I know, was one that kind of stands out. But this year, Mercedes-Benz connected the CLA class to that show, instead of coming to the Detroit Auto Show, instead of coming to the North American International Auto Show, It dropped out of this year for the first time. How much more traction did it get for that car at CES than it would have gotten at Detroit?
That's a good question. And speaking of questions, for all of you out there, here's your opportunity. We've got these folks here who know more about cars than probably anyone. So email at viewermail, all one word, at autoline.tv or via the YouTube chat, or call us at 1-620-288-6546. That's 1-620-288-6546. That's 1-620-AUTOLIN. Leave a brief question and we'll be right at it. And Joanne, you're going to say something, but let me preempt by saying that Scott just subscribed to the Axios newsletter.
All right.
So you got one.
Wonderful. Thank you, Scott.
And Cassidy BB10 said, Todd used to be over at Motor Trend, didn't he?
Yes, I used to be over at Motor Trend. Frank and I were direct colleagues. Motor Trend and Automobile are owned by the same company and have been through several companies since then. But so we're still colleagues in the manner of speaking, I guess.
So Joanne, the tech take on the whole CES phenomenon.
What is the tech take?
Well, I mean, so how do you perceive this in terms of driving forward, you know, automotive technology?
Well, look, cars are changing really fast. We all know, we heard this, you know, cliche, they're computers on wheels. I think it's true, right? And so what's interesting, and, you know, I was not at CES, but I know you were, that is the place where all the startups want to go to get attention, right? They all think they have something fabulous, and they know that a lot of tech people are going to be there. So you'll see a lot of, you know, LiDAR and mobility apps and all this stuff that's sort of the future of transportation is out at CES. But to your point, you know, Todd, I think that a lot of stuff gets lost out there. At least as a journalist, I certainly can't pay attention to all of it.
Or about the, I think, Gold Star, LG showed a roll-up TV or something, right? A flat screen that you can roll up instead of...
Stick it under the bed or
something? Yeah, I guess. Use it as a yoga mat? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned, I bet that they got less traction on that CLA launch, but they probably saved seven-digit figures on the launch. I mean, not renting out the entire Book Cadillac Hotel and setting up a gigantormous, booth at the Cobo Hall compared to what little thing they had there, which, I mean, it was one of the bigger car, you know, thing, but it was still just it was smaller than the Cleveland Auto Show, booth would have been, so.
You know what I think? I think a lot of car companies are very confused about where they're supposed to be putting their efforts. And it's not just in the auto shows and CESs of the world, but it's their actual, you know, their money, their strategic bets, you know? I mean, you look at what's been happening with, GM closing a bunch of plants. Cars are not selling, so they said we need to cut back on capacity for that. But it's mostly so they have enough resources to put into the future. But the future is very unclear. Yep. And so they're making, to me, the bets are getting bigger and riskier. And Mercedes was trying, they put their toe, I think, in CES to figure out how do we introduce a car from now on. But
well, and it made sense. I think Audi did a drive to the show or from the show a few years ago, an autonomous drive, right? And, Ford, which wants everybody to call it a mobility company instead of an automaker, was one of the first to show there, maybe the first auto manufacturer to show it at CES. So, a lot of it has to do with, all you have to do is look at the stock value, the market cap of Tesla, which has made a profit in only two or three quarters of its existence, and compare that with the market cap of Ford and GM, and see why they're interested in being there and not here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did get a sense, though, that this year the auto companies were not as well represented as they had been in previous years. Like maybe the bloom is coming off that rose a little bit. There were no keynote presentations that I'm aware of that were
funny. You know, I went once and it was a Nissan trip and actually Carlos Ghosn gave the keynote, or one of the keynotes,
right.
And he didn't say anything new. And when I went, there was really nothing for me to cover either. Nissan didn't have a new car to show there. Toyota had some technology that it was hyping that, it was easy to pass on in terms of there wasn't much to write about, basically. Mm-hmm. And this was, I think, 2 or 3 years ago. So I don't know that. I don't know that this year is any worse than others. I don't know. Frank, you've covered several now, right?
Yeah, I mean, CES, in my view, now I'm there just really looking for the automotive technology. I've kind of got the blinders on for roll-up screens and stuff, all that other stuff. And, you know, basically, we're working towards the autonomous future, and to do that, we need to be able to sense the environment. We need to predict what is going to happen in the environment, and then we need to plan how to get through the environment. And, you know, these two, the outer ones, the first and third, we're closing in on. And there's all kinds of solutions there for getting nailing down that sensing. And, you know, we've kind of had the planning, you know, how to drive the car. We've known that for, you know, quite a while. But there's little puzzle pieces to put that puzzle together on the floor in booths as big as this one or smaller, all the way up to, you know, the big giant ones and whatever. It's that middle one that I don't know that anyone in a booth in CES is gonna figure out. Along those lines, though, I liked the fact that Toyota went out there this year and they said, hey, we think, let's just let the driver keep doing that middle step and let's use all the technology we've developed for steps one and step three, and we'll call it Guardian. And now, if you're driving along and our sensors go, oh my gosh, something just ran out on the road, and you go like this because you figured that's what you need to do, but we know you should have actually gone like this, we'll just do that. You'll initiate it, and then we'll make sure you do it right and get you where you need to go, and you'll just come out of the accident or whatever going, hey, wow, look at that, I did okay. And I think that's great, and they say they're going to make that available to all manufacturers, which I think is also neat.
So this is their Guardian system.
Yep, Guardian.
So they're working on Chauffeur, which will be full autonomy.
Yep, when they satisfy that middle part of that problem.
Right, so they're basically saying, hey, instead of worrying about the SAE levels 1 through 5, we're just basically going to say, hey, let's enhance the capability of the driver.
Yes.
Let's do it sooner rather
you
than later.
You still decide whether you'll feel worse if you hit the nuns or the baby carriage.
Right.
And by the way, that's a great way. They've also, along with that delineation, delineated between who's responsible for a crash. In Guardian, you're responsible. Once they get to Chauffeur, they are responsible for any injuries or fatalities from an accident.
So the question that I have, this bleeds over to what our next giant subject will be, which is the Detroit show. Joanne, you're covering autonomous technology all the time. I'm sort of getting this sense that there's a certain drawback that you know, both OEMs and suppliers are not as, you know, 2021 anymore. I mean, it seems to be, you know, off in some foggy future. What's your take?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I think that, you know, the hype got ahead of where they are. And frankly, you know, the first 95% of this is relatively easy. And now we're at the point where the hard stuff, predictive, is the biggest problem. Predicting, a machine predicting what a human's going to do. That's the big problem. But I think, you know, there's this sobering assessment that this is just going to take a lot of hard work. We need to quash the expectations. And the car companies and tech companies are the guilty ones here for, you know, hyping this up.
Well, and there's a big perception, you know, in the last, I don't know if they've said a period of a year or a little more, the polling data has gone from 66% of the public at large thinking autonomous vehicles are unsafe and they'll be worse, to 77, because right. We, you know, ran into some, we've had a few accidents, you know, two of them. I mean, during the space of time of which, you know, zillions and zillions of people have run into people.
Right.
But that's the devil we know, and the devil we don't know, we're scared of. And so, yeah, I think we're going to see some autonomy in 2021, and it's going to be robo-taxis in cities, in geofenced areas, with $50,000 sensor suites on them that pay it back because the car's in constant 24/7, you know, use and whatever. But the idea of, I'm just going to buy a car that I can send my kids to ballet practice in all by themselves. No, that's way further out.
And the flip side of that is I think you're going to see the Super Cruise style, which, by the way, Cadillac will be expanding onto other models in 2020, whether or not the CT6 goes away, that you'll see that level two. Maybe it's going to be level three with some lane-changing potential, perhaps, where you get on a limited access highway or freeway, and you can use the steering, the self-steering and the adaptive cruise control to be hands-off for a number of miles, but still have to pay attention and be awake. There are systems in the car to determine whether you're falling asleep, and if so, it'll pull off. So, yeah, those are the kind of the bookends of where we're going to be in 5 years.
So, I guess we're sort of concluding here that we don't need to worry about our autonomous vehicles
killing our jobs. Immediately.
We don't know that there aren't robots out there writing stuff about cars and probably way more favorable stuff than we're writing.
All right, so
it feels like I've read some of those.
Yeah. Other outlets, yeah. Okay.
All right, so let's talk about the Detroit show, which was this week. So CES last week, the last Detroit show in January in 30-some years was this one.
Yeah.
And it didn't snow. Go figure.
Yeah.
But there was a water main break, and there was no water to drink.
So we heard that, by the way, third-world aspect to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Time of year. Yeah.
I just thought that was such a fitting end to January shows in Detroit. You know, it was like, water main breaks. People in hotels can't take warm showers. I mean, it was okay in the end, I guess, but you couldn't drink the water at Cobo or anywhere else downtown for quite a while. I thought the show felt like 2009 all over again. It was sad.
You thought it was sad?
I did.
I didn't think it was dark the way 2009 was. Someone mentioned, reminded me that Fiat Chrysler, I guess it was already, no, it was before it was Fiat Chrysler. 2009 would have been just Chrysler because of bankruptcy. It was later in the year. I'm trying to get my timing straight.
So many lives at Chrysler.
They couldn't even afford to light their display. So it looked dark in 2009. It didn't look dark this year. Mm. It was a little bit better in that regard. And
there were no people. You could practically shoot a cannon through the hall. There was a lot of space where there was just
Germans
a bunch of cars parked.
Didn't bring their entourages of
right.
Press.
All right, we've got to be clear though. This was you're talking about just the press days. This isn't it isn't even open to the public yet.
Right.
So,
correct.
So there was.
Please come.
Sorry.
Starts Saturday.
Saturday morning.
I'm going to get a call from the convention bureau. Sorry.
Yeah. What did you think, Frank?
Same thing. I mean, most of the displays that were there were not down on opulence from years past. There just were so many fewer of them. There was that whole section of dimly lit, questionably tasteful supercars from Envy Motors and things like this.
That's true. That was dimly
lit. That looks like they just used the Cobo, you know, like setup lighting. That looked like the basement of Chicago or New York. Mm-hmm. And it was a big swath of the floor, the back, you know, quarter of the show floor. And that was sad.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, Volkswagen got front and center, you know, right up front. They were the talk of the show.
Yeah, so Mercedes used to be.
Once upon a time, Volkswagen was in the back corner of the building. And this was even when, you know, pre-Dieselgate. I mean, it was just
always. Yes, but once upon a time, if you go back far enough,
they were in the back corner,
and then they had
the
escalators
basement.
Down.
Right.
They had the basement.
New Beetle display, where it was nothing but New Beetle display. And the rumors, which I don't think they ever confirmed, was that circa 1998 or 9, Volkswagen, 98 or 99, Volkswagen spent $23 million on the New Beetle display alone. That was the rumor anyway. Mm-hmm. And Yeah, I think it was. I didn't even think about these supercars on display. That was very dimly lit, and that was in the corner where years ago you had like a two-tiered GM section or something like that. And it has been shrinking bit by bit the last few years. We finished up with the press conferences by early afternoon instead of a little bit later in the afternoon, and even have some OEM spill on into the next morning, which used to happen. But I have to say, for the show, I think the quality was better than the quantity this time. The cars that did show up were kind of interesting and
we'll get to that. Yeah. So I think this is John Manoogian, friend of the show and judge for Eyes on Design, said, "I thought the show was quite grim. All those exotics were ridiculous, like a used car lot," which is sort of your point, Frank, that there were all these random cars there across from the Dodge Ram, or Dodge Ram, the Ram booth, excuse me. Cassidy BB10 says, "The Cleveland show has been sad for a few years. Didn't used to be like that." And Philo Farnsworth says, "Chicago has the best auto show." Okay,
most carpeting, that's for sure.
That's for sure. Yeah, McCormick Place takes up an enormous amount of carpet. All right, so we're going to take a quick break, hear from BorgWarner, and when we come back, we're going to start walking through the vehicles that were introduced in Detroit. So we're going to hear from BorgWarner.
The world is changing at an ever-increasing pace. No matter what the mode of transportation, there is always the need for an efficient propulsion system. And that's exactly what BorgWarner has been doing since the earliest days of the automotive industry. We create innovative mobility technologies that reduce energy consumption and emissions while improving performance. Our proven track record has made us an industry leader in forward-looking propulsion solutions for combustion, hybrid, and electric vehicles.
Okay, and we're back. And before we go to these, to your point of the escalator for the VW thing, Scott says, "I'll never forget that nude beetle display. It was exciting to slowly go down the escalator to see what was down there."
Yeah.
And they had the thing that was making the little beetles out of the recycled taillights.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, and the
election
molding thing. It was like thermoforming.
My kids love that.
They had all kinds of interactive displays.
Yes.
They had young kids with headsets trying to engage the audience and so on.
Yeah.
It was quite remarkable in terms of an auto show sort of thing.
If you found it.
Yeah, if you found it. Well, you had to find it. We wrote about it. Everybody knew about it. I'm sure it did well.
Now the in the basement.
The new Beetle didn't, but...
Yeah, let me tell you, right. But now in the basement, we have Automobility, which is the Detroit show's attempt to, show a lot of the future tech. I actually found a lot of interesting things down there. One of the most interesting things I saw was an airbag that Autoliv is working on. For autonomous cars. Think about this. Once a car is driving itself, right, you push the button, the steering wheel goes away, you either lay back or you swing around to talk to the people behind you. What happens if there is a crash, like you get T-boned by somebody else? This airbag comes out of the seat and comes up and over and gets you like a little cocoon. It was really interesting. Better than a sucker punch in the back of the head.
That's true. So, okay, so we're going to go through this in sort of the order that they were actually even revealed here. So Cadillac came out with the XT6, a three-row SUV. So what'd you think?
Boy, I really wanted to like that vehicle, but it just didn't do anything for me. And I thought it was a decent effort, but... It just didn't pop in any way. It didn't. It has some of the interior problems that GM still faces. I mean, the leather and the Alcantara or whatever they call it, because they're not paying to call it Alcantara on the roof, interior roof. The headliner was nice. The leathers were nice. The trim was nice. They've got carbon fiber or real woods, and they went through several different wood trims you can get, but the stuff in between was still looked like what GM's had for so long. The vehicle, it seems, so this is on the shorter wheelbase of the XT5, 112.7 inches, but they've widened it a bit. It's got a wider track, and it's just a few millimeters larger than the wheelbase of the XT5. They went through all that trouble to avoid going to that really larger Buick Enclave size SUV.
So isn't it the Acadia platform?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so basically XT5, for those who are not familiar with the nomenclature of Cadillac, which is so very clear, is the two-row.
Yeah, mid-size. And so they squeezed a third-row seat. It looks like a Cadillac.
You're really struggling to say something nice here.
It's not as striking as the wedgie Subaru that used that name in the past in terms of design.
Oh, that's right.
It made me a little bit nostalgic for that one, frankly. The third row, I could sit in it as long as the middle row is willing to, you know, share the legroom with their sliding seats, and you do need to do that a little bit. And the trim is striking. That carbon fiber with the brass wires in it or whatever is beautiful. You know, really something. And then they've got multiple different wood grains, the top fanciest one of which is lots of little strips of different woods, like four different exotic species laminated together, so you get this stripy look. It's really cool. But
what's the best thing that Cadillac has going for it? To me, Super Cruise technology. It's leading the industry, and they're not putting it in that vehicle.
Not putting it this year in that model.
No. I mean, that's just a missed opportunity.
Why do you think they didn't do that?
I'm sure they have a reason. I don't know.
Well, they hint or they say that they're going to put it in more models next year, and one would assume that the XT6 would be one of them. I think it's going to do fine for Cadillac. You know, when I say fine, I mean, it competes with Acura MDX and Volvo XC90.
Lincoln Aviator, that's a nice-looking vehicle,
Well,
right?
And here's the thing. That's what I come back to keep thinking about is that Lincoln Aviator, and I've not been that impressed with Lincoln products up till now, but going to that rear drive platform somehow makes a difference. And I was always of the impression that because of the higher height of the greater angle of the steering gear on an SUV, that the rear wheel drive proportions don't matter quite so much on SUVs. But I think if you put the Lincoln side by side with the Cadillac, I think it would look a little more, even though it's got too much chrome, Lincoln does. It might look a bit more elegant, a little bit more befitting its brand.
So I mean, doesn't it come down to that there are probably people who are going to buy either a Cadillac or a Lincoln, and they're not going to think about an Acura, and they're not going to think about a Audi or anything else.
Maybe.
But that's
it
not
still what... seems like it would have helped if they'd have come out with, you know, a hybrid and or, you know, a V model. They've got all these engines that would certainly fit in there.
It's... Right. So this is a 310 horsepower V6 that is used.
The same 3.6 liter V6 used in all the other SUVs in the GM family in that category.
So... Mark Royce told Reuters this week, quote, "We don't have any chances left with taking Cadillac to a really new place. This is pretty much it." Not regarding the XT6, but this announcement that they made last week about Cadillac becoming the lead electrified brand for General Motors. Joanne, what do you think?
Yeah, well, I think that is smart. I think they really don't have a choice because they're, you know, Tesla is killing the BMW 3 Series, right? And all these other luxury brands are coming out with EVs. Cadillac needs to be electric, for sure. And so I guess the question is execution and competition. You know, are they going to be able to break through that? I don't know.
Do you think they can be competitive?
Well, look, batteries are super expensive. It's easier to hide the expense of a battery in a super expensive car.
True.
Not only that, but, you know, all the competition is in that space. Jaguar I-Pace, you know, they're all, you know, the i3 BMW is nowhere because it doesn't look fancy and premium. It's this frumpy, you know, weird shape and whatever. You need to have style and elegance and class, and, you know, it also makes sense. People expect 500 horsepower and super, you know, acceleration in a luxury vehicle. They don't expect it in, you know, a Bolt or whatever. So, yeah, it makes total sense to me.
Yeah, you remember when the Chevrolet Volt with a V came out. A lot of critics said this should have launched as a Cadillac and you would absorb more of that cost that we know, obviously, at $35,000 or $40,000 they were selling them. They weren't making it. They were losing money on them because of the high technology. And it makes more sense just from a first book point of view to launch Cadillac first and then let it trickle down to Buick and Chevrolet.
Let's not forget they came out with the ELR and nobody bought it.
They did. And part of the problem with the ELR is by the time they got that out.
Cadillac Volt, for those who are not.
Yeah, Cadillac Volt. By the time they got that out, they had improved the battery system in the Volt, so the ELR didn't get the same range as the Volt. It was supposed to be a more high performance vehicle too.
And you can't make a Cadillac out of a Chevy, and that's what people are just going to think that is. You know, you can't come out and sell all these other ones and say, oh, here's the fancy version. And people are like,
didn't it work?
Better to make the Chevy out of the Cadillac.
Yeah, within the Katera. Years later, after you bank the profits on the Cadillac.
Exactly. No.
All right, so moving across town, Ford came out with the Explorer. Now, what I thought was interesting about that is boy, they're not leaving any space unfilled with this thing. So they have the Explorer ST, a performance version. They have the Explorer Hybrid. They have the Explorer XLT. They have the Explorer Limited, and they have the Explorer Platinum.
Don't forget the cop cars.
Oh, and the cop cars.
Yeah.
With, right. Like, I think three engines, although I still think one of them is a typo. But anyway, yeah.
Cop car? Yeah. Well, they're doing a hybrid cop car.
Yes, but the press release mentioned a non-hybrid 3.3 V6, and I still am not sure
that's
believe
that.
That's a parking enforcement vehicle.
Yeah, yeah, could be. I mean, it's funny that the rest of the lineup is only one engine, except for the Platinum, the top level of the standard Explorer. You can get the 3-liter EcoBoost V6 with less horsepower than the same engine in the ST. And then you have the hybrid. But all the other models, the mainstream models, will all be the 2.3-liter EcoBoost with a 10-speed automatic. But again, going to that rear-wheel drive platform, which is very interesting, and of course, the reason they're doing that.
So this is the same platform that Lincoln's using for the Aviator.
For the Aviator, and that will be the next Mustang platform because they needed to put volume into the Mustang. You know, until these two SUVs go on sale, is the only unibody rear-wheel drive car, a Ford, available in the U.S. right now. So you need more volume in that platform to do a next generation Mustang, and their platform strategy now, interestingly, looks a lot like Volkswagen's platform strategy. What a coincidence, huh? Mm-hmm. And so this big SUV platform that's rear wheel drive will be adjustable enough to make a new Mustang out of it.
Okay, so Joe Laszlo says the Explorers were wise to go back to rear-wheel drive. Why is that, Frank?
Well, for one thing, and it's counterintuitive, they got a lot more interior space converting from the old one, largely because the old one was a hammer that it's had its head and, you know, and the handle changed three times. But it started as a car. And when you expand it out like that, you ended up with this weird package where you sit too far inboard. It was hard to reach the outer, you know, armrest. You're crammed up against the... And then with the sideways V6, it shoved a lot of the HVAC into the cabin. And, you have to have the wheels behind the engine. And so the wheel wells intruded in a lot. So shoving all that stuff out and putting the longitudinal engine in, lower in the car where it can actually crash and go under everything, just opened up a lot of space. And it just fixed the proportions, immensely. Having those front wheels 6 inches further forward, that car just looks, most of the form language isn't a giant departure from what they had, and yet this car is beautiful, and I always thought the other one looked dumb.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I thought the last one was one of the... how do I put this diplomatically? Okay, it was one of the worst models on the market, the 2011 to 2019.
So you're talking about visually.
Ford Explorer. I didn't like it package-wise. I didn't like it dynamically. I didn't like anything.
So basically,
about
you didn't like it.
I didn't like it.
You didn't like it.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to something that I'm sure everyone likes, which is the Mustang GT500. So they're saying they didn't give a real horsepower number yet, but they're saying it'll be 700 or more from a 5.2.
And they would have said, you know, almost 900 if they were planning on beating, you know, the Mopar guys on the numbers. But they're not. They're like, we want to make the ultimate Mustang, better than any other Mustang ever from the factory. It's got to go around turns as well as it goes, you know, in a straight line. And it looks from all, you know, everything we can glean that that's probably going to be the case. I would put money on the GT500 over a Hellcat wide body on most tracks.
Yeah, they're saying this is going to come off as being more refined, better handling than the GT350, which, by the way, the GT350 comes only with a manual. This one, with its 5.2 liter supercharged engine, will be 8-speed DCT automatic only. And so, very limited edition.
So is there much more they can wring out of the Mustang?
Do they have to?
No, I mean, just in terms of, yeah, of you know, all the variants that they keep.
You know, you don't want to be that guy that says, we've gone about as far as we can go. You know, technology marches forward.
Don't forget that there is an electric car coming,
yeah,
that's based on the Mustang.
Based on Mustang's looks.
Yes. It's got Mustang inspired, right? So I think that opens up a whole new avenue for them when that comes out. It may not be the
highest horsepower we'll ever see out of it, but not necessarily the highest performance. You know, we'll figure out new, better, more sustainable ways of
lighter
performing, yeah, and, you know, so.
But wasn't this supposed to be an
rush out and buy one of these anyway, but,
you have to do that with a car like the Mustang. It's the same as a Porsche 911, the same as a Corvette, same as a Mazda Miata. Yeah, those cars sell really well the first year, and if they don't have updates without doing a full tear-up of the car, if they don't have special editions to reinvigorate interest in the model, they really languish on the sales floors.
Okay. All right, here's what we're going to... So a couple of comments, and then we're going to go to another commercial break, and then we're going to get on with the rest of what was shown, because we've only gone through two. near as I can tell, we've got like
too
eight.
Much.
So Joe Laszlo said, anything on the Mustang-inspired electric vehicle SUV, we just know it's coming, right?
I have seen it.
You've seen it?
Yeah, looks
okay.
Great.
And you can't see anything beyond
it. I haven't driven it, of course, but
I
can't say much about it. But
it's smaller than a regular Mustang.
But it's hot looking, I think.
It's going to be one of these performance SUVs. Imagine, you know, the coupe looks and so forth. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mustang 2, call it.
Oh, no.
All right, so our work says, in regard to Caddy Electrics, I agree with Todd. But I suspect the electrics were introduced in Chevy's political reasons that decade, done in tandem with the clunker buybacks and the $7,500 tax rebate. Green can now be profitable in the Trump era if the public wants it. I think that the reason they did the Chevy Volt was because Bob Lutz said, I want to compete with Toyota.
And yeah, Toyota Prius, so the Prius was the green car of the era. Yeah.
Right Knight 70 says, while Cadillac develops a new, in quotation marks, front-wheel drive-based platform for the XT4, stupid. So I guess talking about...
Well, one would hope that at some point Ford will show them the way. And by the way, we should also give a mention to Jeep, which... The Grand Cherokee is a rear drive based SUV as well, and the Dodge Durango based off of that. So,
and Philo Farnsworth says, and this will be the last one, we'll take the break. I think a few of the new Cadillacs look great, but I can tell you it's a stretch to think that most people will pay the same price for a Cadillac Lincoln as a BMW or a Mercedes Benz.
That's been the age old problem for Cadillac and Lincoln. Everybody knows that the MSRP is not what you don't pay retail.
It all comes down to brand, right? Those guys have stronger brands.
And so people will pay more money for them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Anything?
Nope. The way it goes.
The way it goes.
The way of the world.
All right, so we're going to take a break, hear from our friends at Lear and Bridgestone. Then we're going to be back with a whole lot more.
Lear Kinexus offers a parental controls application with geofencing that sends notifications regarding driving behavior and location, including curfew alerts, acceleration alerts, and speed alerts. All delivered to a smartphone application that includes vehicle location, driver notifications, and a report card of driving history, including notifications when predefined geographic boundaries are crossed. For more information, visit Lear.com.
Okay, and we're back talking about the Detroit Auto Show, or the North American International Auto Show, as it is specifically known. And so Volkswagen came out with the 2020 Passat. So what's more important, that or their sponsorship of the U.S. soccer team?
The sponsorship, I think.
The swag certainly suggests they're handing out soccer balls, not little Passat models.
Yeah, I mean, that really surprised me that it visually wasn't that much of a change over
I know.
The current. And, you know, and it's not like Passats are, like, flying off the shelf in any way as it is. And I just thought that they would have done something. I mean,
it wasn't surprising because of what the new Jetta looks like compared with the old Jetta. What surprised me was that they're still not putting it on this MQB platform. That's their global flexible or, you know, variable front wheel drive platform. The U.S. Passat and the Chinese Passat until now have been the same car, whereas the European Passat is a smaller car. And from what I gather, the Chinese Passat will now go to that MQB platform. So
Volkswagen also announced that they would be spending on the order of $800 million in Chattanooga to produce electric vehicles there starting in 2022.
Makes Donald Trump happy.
1,000 jobs there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, they clearly have this strategy for making a whole bunch of electric vehicles, including, obviously, if they're spending $800 million, they're going to have some capacity in that plant. Joanne, do you think that there's real need for that many cars?
Well, I think that's exactly why Ford and Volkswagen are teaming up. I think that Volkswagen will be able to produce some of Ford's EVs, I presume.
See, this is the thing I wonder about. So there was the announcement that was made on Tuesday morning that basically that there would be some sort of an alliance set up between Volkswagen and Ford. But the specifics seem to simply be that there would be a mid-sized pickup based on the Global Ranger and a large commercial van based on the Transit Custom, and that would go from Ford to Volkswagen, and then that Volkswagen would produce some sort of a city van and would go to Ford.
Yeah.
And you know, and so somehow this whole discussion of, you know, sharing electric and autonomous capabilities,
well,
I mean,
I listened in on the press conference, try to get a question in, but they didn't take my question. But they said that you know, North America is a possibility, and they said that they're still basically in the middle of discussions on how they're going to handle AVs and EVs together. And the indication or the hint I got somewhere was that basically they've already got a certain level of agreement on what to do there, but they're not ready to tell us. And because they don't have everything kind of figured out completely. So the talks began with the commercial vehicles. Then they expanded it to what can we do with all this future stuff, AVs and EVs. And they're still somewhere in the middle of you know, crossing all the T's on that one.
Well, here's the deal. My view on that deal, right, is that these are two companies that have some self-inflicted wounds. And they both have some financial recovery to undergo before they can even think about all this other stuff that's coming down. You know, the future's coming really fast. And so by putting their efforts together, they both save a little money on the commercial vehicles in Europe. I think they can keep down the job losses. Excuse me. They can work out some stuff in their core business. And then what that does is it frees up the resources to try to figure out what they should come out with in electric and AVs. Now, Volkswagen has made an enormous commitment to electric vehicles because of the diesel scandal. They've made a 180-degree pivot. And I think that This is all about hedging your bets again. You know, I talked about how the bets are getting bigger and riskier. And I think that's exactly why these two companies have teamed up. Wall Street didn't particularly like this news because it seemed, you know, it took them 6 months to come up with this, you know, on vans and pickups. But I think there's a lot more under the surface that has yet to happen.
I think, frankly, I think Ford may be looking at GM with some envy on how GM was able to separate itself out of Europe, which is very tough and very expensive. And Ford's been kind of sliding there quite a bit. So what if Ford could have VW at some point in the future do the majority, if not all, of its manufacturing for the European market, where it's always been way better established than GM? But, you know, we don't want to really have to spend too much more money there if we don't have to.
Exactly. So does this deal mean that there'll be a mid-sized pickup truck in the United States rolling around with a VW badge?
Not yet, but I suspect that that's on the way. I read someone in the mainstream press said something like, oh, Ford won't want to do that because they won't want to compete against their own F-150. Well, no, this would be a mid-sized truck. The Anorak is the body-on-frame VW pickup truck that's built elsewhere for the rest of the world. I would love the irony if the chicken tax, which...
So this is the 25% tariff that is...
Which in 1964 drove VW out of the commercial business in the U.S., came back in the form of Ford building the trucks for them. Mm-hmm. It could happen.
All right, now that pickup is for South America and...
Yeah,
Europe,
Africa and Asia, I think.
Yeah.
But as of now, they're not saying anything about building a truck for VW in this.
And while our readers are always, you know, oh, please send us the Amarok, please send us the Amarok, in truth, truck buyers are incredibly loyal, and none of them is loyal to Volkswagen.
Right.
You know, that would be starting from absolute scratch.
Right.
And why start with what is going to, at the end of the day, be a rebadge?
True,
think that makes much sense.
But at this point, the Toyota Tacoma is still the best seller in its segment in that.
Yes, because Toyota.
All right.
Because Toyota, right.
So speaking of Toyota, the 2020 Supra came out, the first Supra in 21 years. Frank, tell us about that vehicle. What do you think?
Well, here's a case where collaboration totally makes complete sense, because two-door coupes and convertibles are just crickets in terms of sales numbers.
Collaboration with BMW.
Yes. So neither the Z4 replacement nor this thing was likely to happen without some collaboration. A lot of people are wringing their hands. Oh, it's a BMW. It sounds like a BMW startup. And you hear these binging inside that's a BMW noise.
Line 6.
Whatever. It's got the same. Well, but I mean, hey, that's a Toyota thing all the way back to the 2000 GT. So, you know, they got the straight six heritage, and they can't afford to make a straight six from scratch, that's for sure.
And they didn't have flat four engines before the...
No, let's yell about that one, this one, you know. I question their, you know, wisdom of, you know, keeping the particle filter that you know, hampers the overall, power rating relative to the BMW. So BMW is going to come out with a little bit more horsepower and torque in the U.S. because they don't bring that European... emission technology over here. But by and large, it looks, you know, I'm glad to have a two-door coupe. Do I love the styling of it? Not exactly. I don't like that thing kind of grafted onto the doors that makes it all that, you know, character line fit and so forth.
Yeah, that's the one line that kind of when I first saw it, I thought, hey, you know, as down as the show is, the fact that Akio Toyota came out here, and I've got to give a shout-out to Fernando Alonso, otherwise my wife will be mad, she'll be upset that if I don't mention him.
So at the press conference, Akio Toyota came out, and he brought out Fernando and Alonso.
A huge part of the show was this presentation, and it's for a sports car when everything else is an SUV. And that warmed my heart a bit.
All right, so Lexus also showed the 2020 RCF Track Edition and the LC Convertible Concept. So, Track Edition?
hey, you know, why not? Mercedes is doing these, you know, AMG blacks and so forth, where it's wings and spoilers and so forth. And, hey, you know, that thing's a naturally aspirated V8, which the other guys all used to make and have gotten away from. So it's neat that we still have that as an option. It looks pretty cool, I'd say, you know. And the convertible? Absolutely. You know, why not? Build that thing. It's beautiful.
Again, more sports cars, not SUVs.
All right.
Well, let me just say that Akio said, you know, he hopes that that Toyota will have more sports cars in the future, that this isn't going to be it. So, you know, maybe, I mean, yes, sports cars are expensive, but they're a big company. Maybe
Celica, 200.
Maybe they'll take the lead on the next one.
All right. So you sort of implied this earlier, so I looked at the numbers. So in 2018, there were 1,979 LCs, Lexus LCs sold, which was down 20%, and there were 3,358 RC Lexus sold, which was down 54%. And going back to the Supra, the best comparison, I guess, would be with the 86, formerly known as the Scion FRS, and they sold 4,146 of those last year, which was down 39%.
Yeah.
So basically, if Akio Toyota didn't run the store, would these things exist?
Well, I mean, if you
look
at
a conventional business model.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like,
well, if you look at the Lexi, if there's enough markup on them, I mean, if there's enough margin on them.
Okay, but they're down 20% and 54%.
Yeah,
I mean,
roll in the convertible.
This is the oldest story in the business that, you know, cars like that, again, they slide after the first year. What was Mustang down? I think it was down something like, I want to say 14-15%. Only the Dodge Challenger was up because they keep putting out all those halos
models
with the
5500 comes in. That'll, you know.
You think that'll make the difference?
The Challenger outsold the Camaro.
All right, so Mustang was down only 7.4% last year.
Yeah, but it was like, still down around 70,000 or something like that.
All right, see, the thing that surprises me, though, is that it was really nice to see that there were companies that were showing sports cars, because as you say, it's like everybody else is showing SUVs.
And by the way, compared with, unlike the Mustang, those Lexi don't go into rental fleets on the West Coast.
So just, we'll do this one very quickly. I thought it was interesting that Elantra GT N-Line came out. So Hyundai is showing that, and then there was a Veloster N that they showed. So again, we have another company that is appealing to the sporty.
They got to get their money's worth out of Albert Bierman. They had to pay him some money to come over from BMW, and he's doing great things over there. Don't restrict it just to this super halo Veloster N.
Complete turnaround of chassis development at Hyundai. It's benefit Genesis greatly and Kia for that matter. So,
speaking of which, going back to a SUV, so Kia came out with a Telluride, which they described as being a big, bold, boxy midsize SUV. So they described their own vehicle that way.
Yeah. Well, boxy means you've got decent interior space at least. I thought it looked kind of good. I kind of liked it.
Yeah, Kia is an interesting brand, you know. I mean, there's a lot of value packed in there, you know. They keep surprising on the quality surveys and all that stuff. Certainly, customer satisfaction. We'll have to see about durability, but I think they're nice looking.
Yeah,
good for the money.
I don't know if Kia made the decision or Hyundai, but I mean, let's face it, the Palisade and the Telluride are kissing cousins, so whoever picked the box idea first, the other one got stuck with it. I don't know which was which, but those two are pretty similar. Mm-hmm. And both interesting and good.
So these are both three-row SUVs, right?
And don't forget the importance of these to Kia and Hyundai in that both brands have been sliding in sales a bit. Subaru passed Kia in U.S. sales last year because they know they haven't had enough SUVs to fulfill the demand for the average American family. All these American families that are going to SUVs. Mm-hmm. So So these are really important models for them.
So Dr. Skill says, I'm in the minority, but I think the Telluride looks like it was designed by a Chinese car company. Mm-hmm. Those headlights look very strange. The name is also not very catchy. Well, that...
I'll let the Colorado,
yeah.
I guess.
So speaking of Chinese car companies, GAC...
Don't call us GAC.
had a press conference.
Yeah, you have a visual here. I saw this before, so...
And so they showed a concept of... the N-Trans EV concept, a seven-passenger SUV, which...
this electric. Sort of electric. Bullet-shaped. It has a rather interesting... So it's a 3+2+2. Bench seat in front, two
what?
Seats in the middle, two seats in the back.
Really?
Yes. And there's a track between the second and third row with a little center console box that can slide back and forth between the second and third row.
And it also appears to have a clear body size.
Yeah.
And instead of wood or carbon fiber
pants.
Trim...
Yeah, that's it.
Yes, you have to wear pants. Instead of wood or carbon fiber trim, it has cork trim, which, if you think about it, Mazda should have used years ago, right? But
is it supposed to float? Why does it have cork?
It's supposed to be more sustainable, I believe.
Okay.
Okay, here's my question. Does it seem to you, I mean, clear body sides notwithstanding, yeah, and that sort of thing, I mean, does it seem to you that there is a very real possibility that that car may go on sale
no.
in this market?
Not a snowball's chance.
They claim that there will be a production version next year.
Here or
China? Well, the reason I use this visual is this is the model, a much more conventional three-row SUV, and I think
that's the one that's
that
coming.
Can come next
this
year.
Is the one that's
that
coming.
Trans ain't coming
right.
next year.
All right, so
and
Frank is holding is a Chinese model of a GS8.
GS8, yeah.
Okay, so this is
a four-cylinder, three-row SUV.
Okay.
I think it's a hybrid.
All right, so there will be a GAC dealer near you?
So they were, last year at the very same show, they said they would be in the U.S. market by the end of 2019. And we all know what happened with tariffs, the Trump administration, the Xi administration at loggerheads over that. 10% tariff went into effect on a lot of Chinese goods last fall. It's supposed to go up to 25%. So now they're talking about the first half of 2020.
All right, so it's predictions. Yes or no? Frank?
Not by that timing.
Joanne?
I agree. Not by that timing.
It all depends on the tariffs. If China and the U.S. can end this tariff business, yes.
All right. So I promised I was going to get you guys out of here at 4 o'clock. We have 3 minutes. So each of
speed
you...
Speed round.
speed. Okay, so the Nissan IMS concept, the elevated sports sedan. Do you like it or not?
I like it.
Great looking.
It's all right.
I was puzzled. They said it was a new segment. I didn't see it being an elevated sports sedan. I mean, I went back and looked at it, and I said, well, it's got 22s, therefore it's
59 inches tall. It's 0.8 inches taller than an Infiniti QX30.
It's like an encyclopedia over here.
It's what he's good for.
Dr. Data didn't appear. Someone
I know, because them. we had too much of a good show here. The QX Inspiration concept of Infiniti, an EV SUV.
Meh. Another one of those. And it won Izon Designs Award, so I don't know why.
This was a sad case where it didn't come at the appropriate time on stage.
When that was one
died
that
behind.
Yeah. I mean, it's got suicide doors, it's got pedestal-mounted seats, and it's got like a hugely high belt line. I mean, it was
strange looking.
The design it didn't hit me as much as the IMS.
Let's see, blah 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 blah. Subaru STI S209.
It's the end of the model line before the all-new WRX and STI come out. I'm looking forward to driving it. A lot of STIs kind of beat you up lately.
The last STI I needed something besides the extra horsepower. It needed refinement.
I still find them to be a lot of fun. I'd love to have one on a snowy road someplace.
Okay, and the final vehicle that we didn't talk about, the Ram 2019 Heavy Duty.
It's got a killer pound foot.
1,000
pound
feet of torque.
Feet of torque from
me. It can tow 35,100 pounds. if you need that sort of thing, eh. But, you know, it's a truck.
It's a numbers generator.
Yes.
Yep.
A numbers of what?
And it's...
You name a number. It's got the bigger one.
And that 1,000-pound-foot diesel is delayed until the federal government goes back to work because of EPA. There's nobody in EPA to certify the testing that it's qualified to be.
And they're not even allowed to donate their time and come in and run the rolls on their own time. Not allowed.
I'm not joking about the EPA.
I'm not a pickup truck fan, but I really like the light-duty Ram.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, it killed it, and then it won North American Car and Truck of the Year. And
more importantly, Motor Trend's Truck of the Year.
I forgot about that. Sorry. Yeah.
Okay, so it is now 4 o'clock. I promise we'd be done. So, Frank, Marcus, Motor Trend, thank you.
Pleasure as always.
Subscribe
to Axios.
So Axios.com newsletters.
Look on their newsletters. Axios Autonomous Vehicles.
Joanne Mueller, it's brilliant. I read it. I've read it from the very start, and it's good. And Todd Lassa,
AutomobileMag.com.
Oh, look at, we've even got it there.
Oh, yeah, look at that. Yeah. So see that where it says newsletters right there next to the word Axios. Drop down there, and you'll see where the, look at that. All newsletters.
Oh, we're doing this in so for those of you who are on the podcast, we're actually getting a demonstration of how to subscribe to Axios Autonomous Vehicles. So
right there.
If you're listening to this on the podcast, you're obviously technically sophisticated enough to be able to do that without the demonstration that I'm sure that Katie is so kindly doing for us.
Thank
now.
You.
And so for all of you who sent in this stuff that we didn't talk about, like we talked about this stuff. Honest. So I want to thank you. So, yes, there is always tomorrow. So, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion. Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems. And by BorgWarner, propulsion solutions that support a clean, energy-efficient world.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday afternoons, get your daily news fix with Autoline Daily, and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.